Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. For today, the 27th day of November, 2024. I'm David Ellis with you up until, I believe it's 2 o'clock. And with me is Graham Vaughn. Please call us at the usual number, 434-1790, or send your email, your messages to us at 266-4862. There are times when we open the program by giving you our points of view, but there are other times when we like to come straight to you. I mean, you have a limited time in which you can make your contributions before this program closes off for Christmas, because it's today, tomorrow, and then Friday. And after that, it will just be Brass Tack Sundays until after Christmas. So what's on your mind today? I see that the credit unions are cautioning Barbadians to be very careful about getting involved in Ponzi schemes. I've heard all sorts of reasons why people get involved in Ponzi schemes, including how hard times are and that sort of thing. But I mean, I thought that we would have learned by now that these are attempts trying to get hold of your money. The people who get in early are the winners, and those who come in after are often the losers. But then again, some may tell you that there are legitimate activities in a society that sometimes make you feel as though you're in a Ponzi scheme nonetheless. So let's take a call. 434-1790.
Hello?
Yes, welcome. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, morning.
I'm going to be very short. Very, very short. Now, we have been talking about the problems that, you know, people are, I don't know if they're creating, but we have been talking about the problem. To solve any problem, you must identify the cause. My question is, are we trying to identify the causes that cause these people to do what they're doing? You must identify the cause. If you don't do that...
Have you seen no attempts to identify causes?
That what?
You've seen no attempt to identify causes in Barbados?
Well, from what I've been seeing, it don't appear like that. So, because, for instance, look at the Zadar situation again. A problem that has been in existence for over 40 years. All you're hearing is about laws being made and laws being this and laws being that. What sense does it make having laws and not enforcing those laws? It don't make no sense. Because as long as you are talking, and you're not implementing anything, you are giving those people a license to keep on doing what they're doing. And I have always said, anytime you have a problem and there's no attempt to solve it, somebody or somebodies are benefiting from that problem. And given the amount of time that this thing has been going on, I have every right to make the comment I just made. Because simply, nothing is being done. Nothing. All you hear is a lot of talk. Anyhow, you have a good day.
Well, you know, when you recognize that a problem persists and all you get is a lot of talk, then it is really important to try to better understand what are the factors that are behind it. Sometimes it's a question of who are the principal players. Sometimes it is a shortage of resources, because often we make decisions, but then you need follow-up. You need other things put in place so that we are in a position to execute what we've spoken about. Sometimes it is sheer corruption that may cause it as well. So it is important to be able to get to the bottom of it. Now, when you're dealing with politics, you can find yourself in a situation where statements are made and promises are made, but then they follow through. You can find that there's a weakness there. It may well be useful to take a more in-depth look at what has happened with the ZR culture in Barbados. These are things which really need to be studied at various levels. I would be surprised if the people at University of the West Indies students haven't done some work in this particular area. But before we can fix the problem, we need to be able to understand why it has been so difficult over such a long period. I think we've gotten some suggestions, but we need more in-depth analysis of it, I would think.
But they have been making, of course, it's not just the Zara culture. In some cases, it might be parents, in some, not all. And of course, not all Zara workers are bad. But my thing is, we know that the nasty music is attracting the children to certain vans. To me, I don't need a university student to solve this. As I said already, put the PSV system to operate under the same exact guidelines as transport board. The same exact. Don't only have the law, have it proclaimed, have it whatever to make it law. And then you go from there, but nothing is being done. And I'm going to end by saying this. I sometimes wonder if some politicians really want to see an end to indifferent behavior. Because as I have always said, those who are involved in law, when the people decide that they don't want them no more in parliament and get rid of them, they're going to start fish or break. They're going back to the law practices. It's like an undertaker coming on radio and say, I will let the whole of Barbados to eat healthy and live long lives.
I think that you are missing a very important element in it, though. And it has to do with the fact that a large section of the people who travel also condone the behavior. You see, if you didn't have so many people supporting it, it would die. So the question is, how are you going to implement a system that would effectively discourage Barbadians from encouraging ZR drivers to do the things that they do?
Well,
that's a major part of the problem.
In some cases, like waiting at a place other than a bus pole and stopping at a PSC, I feel in some cases, in those kind of cases, the passenger should also be dealt with. If a person is walking toward the bus pole, but you are remaining stationary far away from the bus pole because you have not become an accomplice. As far as the music is concerned, remove the instruments that play the music. What is so hard about that? There are solutions, David. For some reason, they are not being taken. They're not.
That's why I'm asking you to do some more work in trying to understand why it can't be done.
David, after 40 years, we still at square one. It is system.
This person, it says to you though, as far as they're concerned, you know, you got to remember that if you are as much in the public eye as you are, you're going to find that you're going to have people for and people against you. The person says that you are miserable and you call brass tacks to listen back to your voice on the replay.
Teddy person, right? Worst have been said about me. Thanks to the compliment. Thank you for that. Thanks for the compliment. I really appreciate it.
I hope you have a good day. What you doing for Christmas, though? Anything special?
Me? Yeah. I do not celebrate Christmas. I respect the religious aspect of it. I have not celebrated Christmas now for 30 years because, to me, it's the most hypocritical time of the year. Right? Where people tell you all the best and after that, back to square one, I can't deal with that. I can cook a saucepan of white rice and put some sardines on it. Because what a lot of us are overeating, there are people out there who don't have anything. Nothing. And that's the mere reason they stop indulging in that foolishness. Because there are people out there who don't have nothing at all. Nothing. So I don't get involved in that kind of thing anymore. For over 30 years now.
What do you observe or celebrate?
Me? I celebrate life. I celebrate life. I thank God every day for giving me the opportunity to be able to open my eyes. And also to make some people miserable by calling the calling program.
Pardon me? What you said there? Making people miserable by calling the calling program?
I also, by making some people's lives miserable, those who always say, Mother Turner, here he, you know, make their lives miserable. But you
but
know
the
what?
More people, I find that the more people tell you things like that, the more it encourages you to do exactly what, you know, offends them.
Of course.
You
of
see,
course.
The truth of the matter is, if a caller could sit down at home and make that decision, it means that something wrong with our system. Our system should never allow a caller to be able to say that he is prepared to make other people miserable. Because what you are effectively doing is saying that you don't care how you damage the program.
No.
That's part of what, but that's an interpretation that can be given to what you are saying.
Well, I don't have any authority to tell people how to interpret things. But as I always say this, if you don't want me to call the program, fix the problem. And therefore, I won't have anything. But then again,
I understand the point. I fully appreciate and understand the point. And I think it is something that, as you look at the development of a program like this, then perhaps you start looking to see how artificial intelligence may be able to help you solve this particular issue. Because it is not about, you want to have people call a program and make a contribution, even if they're regular callers and that sort of thing. But you don't want somebody to sit down and say, you see me? I know there are some people out there who don't like to hear me, and I can make them miserable. Because in the process, what you are likely to do is that you are likely to harm the very product or service that you find useful. So I think you're going to look at it from the point of view of, more so from the point of view of saying, how can I enhance it so that I will still be able to use it? And that I will be able to generate enough interest in my contribution rather than looking at it from the point of view of trying to make some people miserable.
That's their choice. I can end by saying this, right? I never like poetry. Never. And what caused me not to like poetry is Shakespeare. There are people who call the program with poetry, but I would never come on the radio and criticize those people.
At the same point. You may not do it, but I'm saying to you what I would say to them. The same principle applies. It is to look at it from the point of view of to what extent is my contribution helping to enhance it, or, as you say, make some people miserable. Huh? It's as simple as that. But it is a matter that, you know, we need to look at and see how we can strike a balance between one interest and the next. Okay? But thank you very much for calling. Stacks. This person writes, out of concern for what is happening to our boys in the educational system, I wonder if we shouldn't consider attracting well-trained male teachers from abroad to assist in saving our boys. This would be in the same vein as the importation of nurses to shore up our health system. Down to brass tacks.
Hi, good morning, David.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. Blessed pre-independence to you and your family. And I would take the opportunity to hope that season's greetings to you and yours as well.
Thank you. Same.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate it a lot. David, let me discuss a few things. Now, I am sure that you would have heard that what Minister Strawn has been saying yesterday in his address, that the government is boasting that the government would have collected $1.87 billion in revenue. But yet, you can't really see how it's relevant in what is going on in the everyday lives of people here. There are not much improvements in the quality of lives of the people. You know, grocery still high, still challenges in the social landscape, right? Be in the schools, in the agriculture center, in the roads, etc., etc. So this $1.87 billion that they're boasting that they would have bagged and collected in revenue, in your humble view, David, from where you sit, how do you really see it? Where are you seeing it? How is it equating to what's going on in today's society? Because you're not really seeing much improvements. So what's your...
Well, you first of all, before you look at what you see as the negatives, mm-hmm. Can you look at various areas in the country and see any good at all?
Well,
because you have to be balanced.
There ain't the good that they may want to amplify is that projects, major projects, as you would have heard, the PM state that will begin on the way next year, which I have a couple questions about that. But that basically is it the thing with the South Coast and Suez project that they are supposed to be getting on with, and different other little projects that they say are going to be happening. As I would have heard, MP Sandra Husbands also talk about. Apart from those things that they are talking about, as the earlier caller was said, they talk a lot, but when it comes to the actions to connect with the talking, it's a total different ball game. And as far as the South Coast Suez project is concerned, the minister in the Ministry of Finance, David, still has to let the public know what has become of the $84.6 million outfall on the South Coast Suez project. Where is that money? That's what I would like to know, probably you would like to know as well. And not David, that we still don't know the actual cost, right, of the repairs that was done by Mr. Dugard after the Hurricane Barrel affair. And the water reusers, David? All right, I will let you talk, and then I would say what else I need to say.
Yeah, because I deliberately asked you
mm-hmm.
to look at how things are running the country.
Mm-hmm.
And identify for me what you see as areas in which the money is spent, and you can say it is well spent. You have identified the areas that you are concerned about.
Yeah.
But when you look at Barbados, can you say that all the money is wasted?
If you want me to be really honest with you, David, I can't really see where the money is spent, especially what's going on in the country. Honestly, okay. It will have to be shown to me. I can't really
see
it.
Fine. So I know that there are areas that even I would be concerned about. And we do talk about those things from time to time. But remember, all these children who go to school in Barbados every day of the school term, most of them are educated out of the resources that you were talking about. Yes, we have problems at the QEH, but we also have areas within the QEH where people go for surgery, come out, get back on their feet. There are several areas in there where money is, can be said to be well spent. Then we have problems with buses, yes. But there are many areas in Barbados that are served by the buses without complaint, especially those some of those shorter routes in the country. There are people who receive welfare checks. Money is spent on the airport and the seaport for the movement of people and goods. I don't think that you can look at the problems that we face and not also recognize that in many areas, the money is being well spent. Now, there are areas where we do not feel that we get enough accountability. Let's agree on that. But one has to be very careful that you don't come across as though you're only looking at the negative. All those students who go to the University of the West Indies, that's our money. So there are positives and there are negatives.
Yeah, but David, I hear you. I really do. I hear what you're saying. I concur on one or two things, but I can't sit here and say that I will concur with you on everything. I concur with you on one or two things. Yes.
Not all the roads in Barbados are as bad as some of those we are complaining about. There are some areas.
Say that again. Say that. I didn't hear that.
Not all of the roads are bad.
Come on, David. Last you went through St. Joseph.
My friend, I said not all. I'm not saying that there are roads that are in terrible shape. I agree. But not all. Some of them have been repaired. You say you can't see where the money is going. Other people will say they can see some of it.
Let's deal with that, what you just said. Okay, I want to be fair. You said some of them have been repaired. The few, okay, or the some, or the few, or however, that have been repaired. How have they been repaired? Because a good few of them that have been repaired, I'm sorry about that, a good few of them that have been repaired, all right, they've been repaired. And then in two clicks, so they're going back into the same original way that they were. So it would beg to ask another question behind that. Although you're happy to see that some of them have been repaired.
I haven't seen any of them. I have not seen any of them that have gone back to exactly the state that they were in. However, I would like to know what happened on that road out there by Buttles. The one that would take you to where they have the Saturday morning market at Brighton. I know that that road was recently repaired. And I have seen, it looks to me like two huge holes develop in that road. I'm just shocked. And you all can tell me about the other roads that have been repaired where you have seen any decline. But that one, it hit me for six when I went through there and realized how bad that was.
If it can hit a fellow like you for six, you can imagine what it could do to a chap like me. So, you know,
That's a question of trying to ensure that you get value for money. And it is not enough to come and fix the road and celebrate it, only to find that in a matter of months, the road just deteriorates. It's not good enough. But having said that, my point to you is that it is not all bad. There is some good. And we need to be able to appreciate that.
Yeah, but also too, David, as I land the plane, because I, there's enough to talk about, but there are other times that me we get to have a good chat. Also too, my brother, what was the hurry? There are two things here. Why was the, what was the hurry for the Water Reuse Act that was, it was seemingly, if I should use a word, forced through Parliament so fast? And remember that legislation, that's the legislation that would have dealt with the operation of the plant they want to build. So how come that was rushed through Parliament so quickly? That's what I want to know. And also, to end, although the all clear, it would seem, that was given for the drinkable, for water to be drinkable in St. Lucie, you know, it still would beg to suggest that although the all clear was given, the residents don't know the actual results from the testing. You know, it hasn't been really communicated and discussed with the residents of St. Lucie. So if they expect the residents of St. Lucie to trust in them, right? But this lack of communication, we have to find what would be the impact. You know, the impact on the residents as far as trusting them with the information that they should have communicated with the residents. And I will leave a solution with them.
I think that while we discuss what has happened in St. Lucie, one also has then to look at the problems that we were facing back in 2017 with St. Lucie plus areas in St. John and St. Thomas and St. Andrew. And the question here is whether there has been any improvement in access to water and or water quality in those areas since then. Since the government embarked on this debt for climate swap, and has been talking about how much money it is getting for the sewerage project, many people have been asking a question. What happened to all of that money that was picked up by the government in the sewage and garbage tax since August of 2018? Where has all of that money gone? Or where is it supposed to go in light of the fact that the government is getting all of this money now from the debt for climate swap? Somebody reminds us that we were told some time ago that the government was collecting $18 million a month in this tax, and that it amounted to something like $216 million per year. Somebody in the government really must say what is going on in this regard. You can't rake in all of that money and then come and celebrate that you have been able to get a loan and you get grant money and you know, it's a lot of money. I think I heard some in the vicinity of $240 million or something like that. And people sitting down here saying, so why have we been taxed so hard? If that is the case, what are you going to do with all that money that you've collected? So somebody responds to the question about the sewage and garbage tax and where all this money has gone. This person says the proceeds from the garbage and sewage contribution, the GSC, are split between the Barbados Water Authority and the Sanitation Service Authority. This measure has removed the need to provide operating subventions to the SSA. Any support from government to both entities is limited to capital formation. They say the money from the GSC can't even upgrade the sewage plants and finance the operations of the Sanitation Service Authority. And if you use the money from the GSC to upgrade the sewage plants, which part you can get the money from to run the SSA? Your thoughts on that? This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, what will be the come of the guy that uses it when he come on, uses it to say a pleasant day to you? I look, I ain't hearing he.
I can't be sure. I don't know.
But you know what I mean?
Yes, I know who you mean.
Yeah, I think recently okay. I hear you refer to he as Carlisle. But I haven't been hearing him. Nor am I hearing Velma, the familiar female caller. Okay,
you mean Miss Undecided?
No. From down St. James. She says her name is Velma. She usually calls every program.
Okay.
Okay, have a good day.
Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning to you too, Mr. Ellis. How are you this morning?
I'm well. And you?
Yes. Not bad at all, you know. I have a problem here, Mr. Ellis. I'm a member of one of the leading credit unions in the island. Mm-hmm. I recently paid off a loan this month that I had from them. It's over 10 years and 5 months. When I take out this loan, I had to make a $3,500 to get the loan. I was told when I done pay the loan, I would get back that money along with interest on it. And they also have a compulsory savings for the duration of the loan that I would also get back also. The loan is finished now. And now I'm going to get collect the money and tell me that there's nothing there for me.
Clearly you would have to take it up with them though.
Yeah, but I will always try calling, can't get hold of the person at all to put me through the hole I want to get through there.
Well, you know that there is a body that regulates credit unions in Barbados.
Oh, yes.
I would suggest that you seek guidance from somebody at the Financial Services Commission. If you're trying to get through to them, and you can, because this is a complaint that we get quite a lot these days, not only from people who are trying to make contact with credit unions, but generally in business, you know, there's been a deterioration in the standard of response to people.
No, my loan is
but of course, you must, before you go, hold on a minute, before you go any further, you can't just rely upon a phone call. Yeah. I believe that if you look at their website, they have various ways that they can be contacted.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there must be some way that you can write an email to them indicating your concern and asking them to respond to that concern.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just rely upon the phone call.
No, Christmas, no, you can't look at my money, can't get the money at all.
Well, it's a serious enough matter that you should move now to write to them. Or the other way of dealing with that is to actually go to the credit union yourself.
But I plan to then actually go to Belmont to get it sorted.
Precisely. You know, it is too important an issue to just leave it up in the air like that. Okay?
Exactly.
But it is not a matter that really can be effectively pursued here. You got to deal with the company or the agency involved.
I just got to put it to throw it out in the amateur.
Okay.
You know. So that's just what happened.
All right, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
Fine. This person says a discussion needs to be started on how import duties are calculated at customs. The writer believes that there is no logical explanation on how it is calculated. Is it that the system is set up to mislead the public and avoid accountability, they ask? Why is the public asked to pay import duty which is calculated on the cost of the item plus shipping and the 17.5% VAT on cost of item, shipping, and import duty. Did someone make a mistake when coming up with the tariff regime? Did the IMF have a hand in it? Is this why it is so hard to do business in Barbados? They say that they want Minister Strawn to come and explain this matter to the public. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Mr. Ellis, good morning.
Hi, morning.
This guy's well, Franklin. I'm driving and I'm hearing your caller, just now, complaining about the matter with the credit union.
Mm-hmm.
There is a solution. As a matter of fact, every credit union, cooperative, rather, because the credit union is just a financial cooperative, but every cooperative must have a supervisory committee. And in accordance with the rules set up by the Financial Services Commission and in the legislation, you must report your complaint to the supervisory committee. And if you are not satisfied with the supervisory committee, then you can tell what you the Financial Services Commission dispute will cost you $25. As a matter of fact, now that I'm on it, credit union has a red skills, right?
Your line is a bit compromised, you know. So you're breaking up a bit. Some of your we're missing parts of your words.
Hopefully, I was moving at the time, so that's not my job.
Okay, yeah. So let's see if it improves. Yeah, go ahead.
And so what happens? There's been you a matter to the Financial Service Commission. They will either decide it themselves or they will employ an arbitrator or a panel of arbitrators to then decide who's right and who's wrong. And then, so then all of us are going to have to call the same people and try to.
No, the quality is not improving, Caswell. It isn't improving at all. I mean, if you want me to, I can make it possible for you to come back in via Zoom. Is that okay? I'm going to send you the link and see if you can get in that way, okay? We look forward to hearing you because what you're saying is important. I think my recommendation to the caller that they need to do more to actually get the credit union involved to know exactly what the complaint is. I think that's where it begins. But we also have to raise this question of the difficulty that some people claim to have in trying to get through to some of these places. This communication crisis that seems to prevail in too many organizations and businesses in Barbados. And I really think that the people who manage those entities need to take a further look at it. And so, you know, there's a lot of discussion about cost of living. And there's often a response that Barbados imports all of the inflation and everybody else got inflation. And that's one side of it. But there's sometimes we are ignorant of some of the other things that are happening at this level that are influenced by policy. Now, the complaint that we just had about the tariffs that are being imposed on goods at the customs provoked this response. The person said the duty structure is very straightforward. This government changed the structure and moved it from charging duties only on the items to also now include items plus shipping. So this carries up everything in Barbados. says the writer, and merchants have been asking them to change it back. Then there's another one on taxation as well. This person says the government needs to say why the 9% corporation tax increase from January 2024 was not only applied to multinational corporations, only as part of the government plan to be taken off the OECD gray list. And I'm not so sure what they're saying here. They're saying it wasn't applied, or it was applied. Anyhow, it says, with this across-the-board 9% corporation tax, the government will be taking at least three times that budgeted, and we still are borrowing every time we look around. In their judgment, they're saying it doesn't add up. They go on to say that companies in 2023 were paying $170K for that same revenue for 2024. The tax is in excess of $475K. In their assessment, some international business companies will be forced to leave this jurisdiction. Who responds to that concern? This is down to brass tacks. Welcome.
Hello. Hi, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm good too, Mr. Ellis. Now, recently, speaking to you, I told you that I would dive in my books on, and somehow you seem to think that it is a mystery. But all that means is that you would do what you're doing till you die or till you're unable to do it anymore. So I will be a caller until I die. Anyhow, Mr. Ellis, I see that you was grilling Bascom very much this morning about what he can see and what he can't see. But he's the governor of the central bank. It's who say that we should get a certain amount of growth, but you're not going to see it. So he is the body that you should be grilling as to why we ain't seeing it. Because somehow, like I said, it is the indices that you use that will determine what you're going to see. And right now, homelessness is on the increase. Vagrancy is on the increase. And welfare claims is on the increase. And that's there crystal clear for everybody to see, because the operatives in there is stating it. So the governor too I've got to come and state what he do that we can see, and then we were able to see what else that we can't see. Now, I don't know if you can remember a time that Clyde Maskell was on the program of Sander with Barry, and they was discussing the same sewage as solid waste. And they cornered Clyde Maskell, and he wanted to send the figures to Barry, even though he had the laptop ready that he could read them out off of it. In the end, he ended up reading them out, and he said it was making between 78 and 82 million a month. So we could average it out about 80 million a month. That's what he said. Since then, I hear all different kinds of corrections and things, but that is what he said on the day. So there's a lot of money there. I don't know how it's spitting or how it ain't spitting, but I know you saw an article where the water authority that was collecting the money loaned themselves some money. So I don't know if that amount of misappropriation of funds too, because call you responsible fee don't mean that you can lend it to yourself. They should still get approval for it. So that is one that you could chaw on to, Mr. Ellis. I don't know if you have anything to say about those two things.
No, not a thing.
Oh, you had a look at today's paper already?
Yes.
You see page 12?
Tell me what you're talking about. You don't
I'm talking about...
I don't remember paper by page.
Well, you see, when the articles jump out at me, you try to put back reference to them. Dwight Sutherland, Minister Dwight Sutherland speaking in Parliament yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. There's 1, 2, 3 short columns, and then there's a long column. And the last paragraph from that column there. He said that the referring to the replacement homes, that they did 23 steel houses. You could verify that?
No, I can't verify anything.
That's why it's in the paper. I don't have the paper in front of me now.
Oh,
I think it is 23 steel houses. Anyhow, Mr. Ellis.
It says here, basically looking for the
last paragraph. The last paragraph in the fourth column.
This has been a mammoth task to rebuild and repair houses as a result of the freak storm and Hurricane Elsa. We've not closed off 100%, but we have done well. And I challenge any government to put their statistics against ours. It says here, right, you said that they had built 23 light gauge steel houses under the East-West project were allocated to families affected by the weather systems. That's what he said.
And that's a record. And that's a record. Mr. Ellis, that's a record he won't put up against somebody. Mr. Ellis, they ordered 150 houses because the artisans here could not build 150 houses in 6 months, Mr. Ellis. That was the claim for doing it. They wanted them by Christmas in 2021, and the artisans can build them, and they bring 50 that should be 3 months, and them should assemble them in 3 months and have them ready for December 2021. That's a record you will put up there for somebody to put something up against that, Mr. Ellis.
Do you understand what he said? He said that 23 of them went to people who were affected by the weather systems. It does not necessarily say that those were all the houses that were built. We would still have to question that to determine whether he is saying they built only 23, or of those that were built, 23 went to the victims of the hurricanes.
Mr. Ellis, all of that I understand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they were supposed to get 150 by December. That's what I question, you know. And up to now, 3 years later, not even 100 they do. But then you can't want to put that flimsy record up alongside somebody record.
I know who is somebody. You mean Democratic Labour Party's record?
He had to know who he tackling. I don't know. He putting up his against somebody. I don't know who.
Anyhow, let me see get some other feedback to some of the things that have been said in the program. Because somebody says here that import duties are not calculated on that, because after freight and customs duties. Well, I believe the because shouldn't be there. But it says it's not calculated on that.
Anyhow, Mr. Ellis.
After freight and customs duty. This is in accordance with Section 731.1. They also go on to say that shipping was always included. The government took away the discretionary powers of the controller of customs. So persons have to pay on more items. That's a response to a contribution which was made earlier.
Anyhow, Miss Ellis, I want you to get Mr. Sutherland to clear up something for us out here.
What's that?
When when he first took over housing from Mr. Duguid, he said clearly, these steel frame houses were not fit for purpose. Literally tossing Mr. Duguid under the bus. I've been asking all along what he meant by it. So now that he's back here explaining again, see if you could get him to explain what he meant by that. Because he too, I think he was some kind of engineer down at the cement plant. He would know something about engineering. And I was, from my distance, would say that the steel frame houses is a good project. It's just that I think they were too costly to begin with. So I would like him to explain what he meant when he said that they were not fit for purpose. And you and he can chaw on that, because I got to go and do some things. You coming back on Friday?
No, I won't be here on Friday.
I
believe I swapped with Kristen Turton.
Okay.
So she'll be in on Friday, and I'm on today.
You have a nice... all the best for the holidays, and we'll catch up in the new year.
All right, same to you. This person says that they work in the international business sector, and where the global tax on international businesses is concerned, it was enforced by entities such as the OECD as a way to ensure that these companies pay their fair share of taxes in the countries where they actually operate. They say the only way to stop international businesses from leaving, or the only way to encourage them to come here, is by enhancing business facilitation, such as the new version of corporate affairs. However, the ability to quickly receive banking services, among other services, such as utility installations, must also be factored in. It is not totally the government's fault. This person who says they are a regular listener to the program says that people are complaining about the manhole covers or potholes on Highway 1. They say that they appreciate that the road was, they say, mill and paved, and probably won't have the manhole covers corrected for a good while. I don't know that it was mill and paved. They thought it was completely redone, or that it was supposed to be. They want to know whether we couldn't have the area around the holes painted in a bright color so that there would be at least more visible to people who are driving along that particular road. She also wants to know why the number plate people having to register with licensing authority. And she complains about blinding bright lights. And whether we couldn't have vehicles regulated to go for annual inspection prior to getting insurance. Well, that, you go in that direction in Barbados, so many cars would either be operating illegally or will be off the road as you go through that process. This is down to brass tacks.
Good morning, David. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, I'm okay. And you?
Good. Everything pretty cool, brother. Listen, you started the program with the talking about the credit union, and it is one of the areas that I have some deep concerns about, because more and more Bajans are putting their funds on the credit union. A lot of the retirees now are sending their money to the credit union. But I'm not sure in this digital age that, you know, the necessary protections are put in place as they should. And I will give you one example with my credit union. Wonderful staff. They're in six rows at the Public Workers Credit Union. But for the last few transactions that I've made there, and we are being, you know, encouraged to go to the ATM more, there are no receipts available to the customers, one. And two, I do not think with so much, you know, hacking going on, and so much talk about hacking from the various agencies, that when you do a transaction, when a transaction is done, especially with these, with the major credit unions or the banks, I don't see why you cannot get receipts coming to your phone or to your computer. Now, a few weeks ago, I heard you on the program with a gentleman who said he lost 20-something thousand dollars, and he was told to check with the police, which, from my understanding, that was not a police matter. To primarily, the credit union should have been able to deal with that internally first, and there should be one calling in the police. But I am saying that, you know, while the service at some of these places, it really is excellent, and I can speak that for the 1 in 6 roads with the staff, I am not seeing the necessary mechanisms put in place, you know, to protect the client. And I would encourage the Public Workers Credit Union to put in that free charge. I know the banks have it. I know some of the other credit unions have it. Where if you do a transaction, immediately a PIN comes to your phone or computer where you know well money has been placed on the union or money have been taken off. I think it's a safety feature that in this day and age we should have. I don't know if you have any comments before I go on.
The only thing I would observe is that if you're not getting the information coming to you immediately, there are many people who are able to go online and check their accounts to make sure that, you know, the transaction is indeed recorded. You may not, that's one way of dealing with it, because I think what you're saying, I appreciate that you want the receipt in your hand. But if you don't get that, don't you have the facility of going online and checking?
There is the facility there, David, but the standpoint that I'm looking at it from is that if you have someone trying to hack your account or something is done on your account, then you have immediate knowledge of it. You would go to make the check if you carry a transaction, you know, in most cases. But I don't think that everyday persons will go and, you know, be checking their account. But if something is done, if something, you know, the way it's done to your account, then you would get that receipt so that you can immediately notify your bank or credit union, look, I don't have knowledge of what went on here. Could you look into this immediately for me? Right? And like I said, I say that against the background, as a person who has sat on the board of a former credit union, and do know that they're, you know, that people do trade a thing or two. So I'm just looking at this as an extra.
I think it is very important, given all that's been happening with the hacking and all of that, to check your account or accounts regularly.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it every day, but it is advisable to check it every 2 or every 3 days. To make sure that you keep track of what is going on.
Yeah.
I think that's one way of trying to be vigilant. Okay? Yeah.
As far as the roads are concerned, I would like to recommend, because I in my area, there was a road done recently, which in some areas have you know, been falling apart. But I set up a committee with some of the persons in my area, because it the road would affect all of us, and we had several clashes with the guy who was doing the road. For instance, the part of the road, major part of the road, he just had to scrape the surface off, and he was content with that. But then when he get into the major part where he had to dig the soil out, he said, but we have an agreement with the government that we are not supposed to go over 18 inches. I said, well, that is a foolish agreement. The minister had to be, the representative for the area had to be called in, and others had to be called in to get that problem rectified. He still didn't go down and take out all the dirt so that, you know, the road would not be compromised in a few years. But I think it is important for residents now. I know that it's done in other parts of the world to come together and form, you know, little committees where they can report back to the government officials and let them know, look, this is mere nonsense that persons have to understand that it is our money. It isn't money coming from 30 members or 24 members. It is our money that is being spent, that is being wasted out there. And you have to put the persons under pressure to ensure that. I think once that road is finished, my man, you got to live with it. You know, bad or good, you have to live with it.
Well, I must tell you, somebody sent me information here about the road at Bottles that I complained about that has these huge holes in it after it was recently fixed. And they say to me it is as a result of work done by the Barbados Water Authority. And as usual, they didn't fix it back properly.
And
I mean, that's about money. That's about a lot of money that has been spent. And you mean to tell me you come back to this situation where a utility would go in the area, dig up the road, and then leave the place in a mess?
And that, David, can be very dangerous, because I spoke to you about a year or two ago of a situation where one of the utility companies left a hole in the middle of the road in Marchfield, St. Philip. And unfortunately, my grandchildren coming up at night, they wouldn't even have the thing around it, and their mother dropped in the hole, the car turned over, and all kind of thing. And within 2 days, they were up there getting it fixed. Well, it was not the Water Authority in this case, but it is a very dangerous situation for the country if that continues, and that happens often. But it falls clearly on the Ministry of Public Works. They have to put the necessary people in place to make sure that these utilities...
I don't know what their issues are. There's another side of the picture, you know. Sometimes we know what they are supposed to do. But when you get behind the story, you will then hear how many people they have and how many people they don't have. You will hear all the woes about their management systems and stuff like that. I do not know. All we can go on is the end result. And you know that it ain't good enough. There are too many people in this country, notwithstanding all the money that the government talks about, there are too many people who are having life hard. And, you know, it cannot be fair and reasonable for money to be wasted in this way. Not good enough.
And finally, David, one of the things that have bothered me over the past few months is the hacking that is going on. We are hearing about this government department being hacked and that one being hacked. I would like to hear more about the implications of this. You know, when you know this too because you travel, when you travel to the States and those places, you hear about identity theft and this and that. And it is a major thing out there. And I would like to hear more information.
Like what, so?
On the implications, the extent of the hacking. You hear about this department being hacked. What are the implications of this? How much of it was it?
Well, if you are directly impacted by it, in other words, whether if your information has been stolen.
How do you know?
You the agency that has been attacked has a legal responsibility to inform you directly about it.
Mm-hmm.
And to put you in a position to ask questions about how it is likely to affect you. That is how it's supposed to be done. It isn't supposed to be done just by going on the radio and telling people that there's been a hack and we're working on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my information, my understanding of what the legislation requires.
Well, I'm hoping that more can be spelled out on that, things like identity theft and that kind of thing. Because if we are going into, as we say, the digital age, you know, people, it is an age where people have to be properly educated about, because you can find yourself going to the border control in the United States and when they pull up your information, it could be far from what it really is. And, you know, I say that to mention the seriousness of this, of really what is going on as far as this hacking is concerned, right? So okay. I'm hoping that we can have more of it, David.
All right. Thank you very much.
You have a wonderful independence, sir.
You do too. Somebody else is saying that they agree with the concerns that have been raised about some of the recently resurfaced roads. They say that they travel along Gibbons Bogs and Parish Land, and those roads have been damaged by the BWA, rain, and heavy-duty vehicles. So that combination, it's put us in a position where people believe that roads that have been recently resurfaced are not standing up well. Good morning. Down to Brass Tacks. It's 11:39.
Good morning.
Yes, please. Morning.
Yes, Mr. Ellis. I have something there that was bothering me. You understand? And I decided whether I would call, because I didn't like what was going on. I am a member of a credit union. I am not going to call the credit union name. But
got two major ones in Barbados, so whether you call your name or not, we can still narrow down who you're talking about.
Listen to me. I got a call about 4 to 5 months ago, right, on my cell phone. And they tell me, we're calling from the credit union. I said, which credit union? They tell me, which credit union belongs to? I tell them which one I belong to. It was a guy. He tell me, well, we check your records, and you have a balance of a substantial amount that on the credit union. I said, that ain't true. I said, I finished work about 3 years now, and they send me a quote every 6 months. The credit union usually send you a quote on what you owe and what balance and everything. And if I did even owe the credit union money for that 3 years, it would have had to take out for my money. I was getting medical off it for about a year. And then my money that I get, that I had there, they would take it out of that. He tell me, well, that's what I see here. I said, well, I will have to come and get that sorted out. He said, well, listen to me. You don't have to go into your credit union. You could call back this number here, or I will call you back, and we can arrange the amount of money it is and how you plan to pay it.
Whoa.
When you listen, when you call me back and tell me how much I owe, I will deal with that there, so. He said, okay. I said, I called back the number the next day, and he told me, the same person answered the phone. I said, how much the money is? He said, what you have to do, you can arrange to give me so-and-so amount of money, and it will have to go to the credit union. I said, no, but the credit union is supposed to send me that by mail if I owe them money. And I ain't take it serious. And then after, it keep nagging me, what would the buddy get my cell number? Then he called the landline. They called the cell number. And I ain't paid any more money. Cause I was listening. I was looking for the next statement now to come in to tell me where it was. So when the next statement come in, nothing's happened on the statement. Vision, if I done were about 3 years, one medical office, and then bill, and then thing, any money I owe them, they would take it out. So I said to myself, the statement come in with nothing so. And you know, Mr. Ellis, the person never called me back. I called the number, and the number can't take my call. The number blocked.
Wow.
So I just alerting people that in case you get anything like this, do not respond back to the person. Because I get the response for the body to tell me to arrange to pay so and so. And when I wait, the statement coming then and there, the person never called back, and when I call, the number blocked.
He ever told you how much money you were supposed to be owing the credit union?
No, he told me that I could agree to pay such and such amount. He said that you can agree to pay about $1,500. You understand? I waited for you to call back now to tell me when to come to pay. Because I didn't know that I didn't pay. But I want all people out there to be careful, because at least it wasn't on the landline phone, on the cell phone. The people doing a lot of foolishness on these phones, and they're doing foolishness with the credit union.
But I'm very glad.
No question, because I know that the credit union will have to send me that there on my statement or write me a letter telling me I owe that. So, Mr. Ellis, I just want people out there to be aware.
Understood. I still believe that you should draw it to the attention of the credit union, because
Ellis, something in my head tell me that something wrong somewhere.
Okay.
3 years in our work, and then we'll send you something by a cell phone to tell me that I owe them money?
No, just hold on. Listen, just hold on. First of all, you don't know how many other people have gone through this particular experience.
That is true.
If you draw it to the attention of the credit union, they may be aware of other things that have happened. They are also in a position to determine whether they will push it further. The number that was blocked, it may well be possible for the police to be able to trace what is going on there. It is also possible that it could be somebody who may well be working in there. You don't know. So you want to put them in a position to investigate the matter. But what I'm very glad about is that you handled it in such a way that you did not give in to the idea of taking up your money and giving it to this person, because that sounds like a swindle. They just wanted to rob you. All right?
Yeah.
It sounds like from the way that they approached you in the first place suggested that they were not. Did you get the impression that they were sure that you belonged to a credit union, or they were just checking out to see whether you were a member of one?
Yes, I feel it is that.
Did they call the name of any credit union when they called you?
No, to tell me that they think the information, they check the records and see, but they ask me which credit union I belong to.
Precisely.
You understand? And I told them. So they tell me I have a substantial amount of money that I owe. And Mr. Ellis, from there, I click. I said, that can't be true to myself. I said, it don't work. 3 years. That's about 5 months ago now. It don't work about 3 years.
Some people believe that you got to be careful calling back any of these numbers. I mean, there's something called phishing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes making the call can put you in a situation where other things flow from that. But you just be vigilant. I would say you still need to call the credit union and explain to them what happened, okay?
Yeah, but Mr. Ellis, the thing about it is that number would have deleted. I changed my phone since that, and that number would have deleted out of my phone.
Okay, no problem, but, no problem. Just draw to their attention what you are able to. That's what I think you should. Okay?
Okay, thanks very
much. Thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks.
Morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm okay, thank you. Your opening conversation, you spoke to the program and it's how it can be watered down and so on. I as this is your last call for the year, your last moderatorship for the late year, I just want to as a regular caller, I just want to assert that the calling programs have significant value and they are an important part of the social landscape here in Barbados. And as much as, you know, we take the bitter with the sweet, I think generally there's a need for long may the calling programs go on and provide a place for persons to express themselves. All right, so we take the bitter with the sweet, as I said, and we take the good with the bad, but I think it serves a greater purpose than what may sometimes be deemed as nuisance. Right, so I just wanted to say that, and I want to take the opportunity to wish you all the best in the upcoming seasons as they unfold.
Thank you, and I wish you the same.
Right. Good. I think a significant challenge that we continue to grapple with, when I listen to news briefs yesterday in particular, where Jamaica recorded what if they call it the bloodiest week for the year. Some 44 homicides they recorded. And I understand in St. Lucia they're up to 70-something for the year. In Barbados, we're headed hard towards 50, it looks like. So across the region, against the backdrop of a symposium or something that's being mounted in St. Kitts over the next 2 days to deal with crime, regional crime. This, to my mind, represents one of the most, well, if not the most significant challenge we face. I mean, I am, very, very concerned about the instances of gun crime. If we can take a look at what has played out here, where younger people are getting involved in gun crime, how we respond to this regionally is one thing, but it is something that is knocking on our doors in our communities and represents a real daily challenge. So I think that, as we move into the new year, there must be, I'd hope that, we can come up with ways, really strategic and practical ways to stem the, or to divert persons from being involved in this. And I know
I believe that the idea of that has come from the Criminal Justice Department being able to get into the schools early and to see what is happening, do the research, but doing the research is not going to be enough. We all agree, I believe, that intervention is key, and we have to build up resources in what we might see as the softer skills. The idea of relying almost exclusively on the strong arm of the law is not going to be enough. And I think we all know that. Let's begin there. We begin with the with this whole question of trying to reform education in a way that reaches more of those people that are being lost in the system. That's really where we need to put a lot of emphasis. But we can talk a bit more about this after the news. Good afternoon. Welcome to the continuation of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks, going until 2 o'clock this afternoon. And rain is falling in some parts of the country. Somebody is saying that there's been thunder as well in Station Hill in St. Peter. So be very careful out there. Welcome to the program.
David, I was holding.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Go ahead. You've been holding for a long time.
Oh, I got other things done in the meantime. But while you intimated that getting research from schools may be important, I just want to suggest though that children are they live what they learn. They observe stuff, and so I think it's important that we, while that may be a place to start, given the reality of younger people getting involved in crime, it's also important that the custodians and the adults, the double standards in society are there, and children model their behavior, you know. They see the criminal culture, and that is accepted by some sections of society, right? So they too have to come to terms with or deal with what they perceive as behavior that seemingly is acceptable. So it's important though that we take a step back and look at where we've come to.
Why don't you help us to understand what you see as some of the behavior that is prevalent out there that you would like to see curbed?
Well, I'm of the view that there is a criminal network that a criminal enterprise that perhaps is allowed to thrive based on, you know, the level of enterprise that they perhaps, we know that the drug culture is there, the gun culture is there. We know that you know, it is, there are cartels and that kind of stuff. So when I drive around, I see groups of young men opting to stay on the block and, you know, be supported by certain elements that, you know, obviously have access to resources, and then they can fund them, you know, in doing nothing. That's of concern to me, because ultimately, you know, these guys will function in a way that become a threat to the rest of us, right? So I think that we have to get out there and show alternative ways of functioning to these young men, because it's not that there are not jobs available, but if you drive around, I know there are several, you know, peers who are in construction and so on, who tell me that the young fellas don't want to work. They have other alternatives that perhaps will give them, working for $100 a day is not appealing to them. So I feel that industry, you know, as we are on the cusp of independence celebrations.
You talked about the double standards We sit down here and wait to see where the smoking of ganja all over the place is going to take Barbados. Under the government, this administration, they have been easier on this whole question of people having spliffs and that sort of thing. But you may, you go so many places right now, and the smell is licking you down. The question is whether it is going to just stay there or may serve as more of a gateway to other things, to other drugs. We were brought up to believe that smoking marijuana excessively would bring about some kind of damage to people's brains and stuff, if not just their behavior. However, once this door has been opened up, you know, it is uncertain whether it will have that kind of impact or whether we will just have a lot of people walking about feeling more enlightened because they're able to smoke a spliff with ease and not have to worry about the police and things like that. Indeed, part of the issue is that they don't even worry about other people who may not be interested in smoking or have the smoke come in their direction. That's part of what I see out there.
Yeah,
you don't
see that? Yeah, I do, and as I, that's why I'm saying to you that you know, the almost apathetic behavior where, my goodness, like once I can get a space where I can you know, just lying here on the block. To me, that lack of purpose, that lack of direction is crippling to any society. And
well, you got to go and look at a whole range of things. We spent a whole set of time telling men that they were, and boys, that they were no use. All right? Actually, you know, all of this gets into the fabric of the society. And we need to look at the kind of messages that we have been sending over several years.
Okay. That's true. But I still think, though, that how we begin to recapture some of the you know, that energy that is out there, that, you know, the
so what, have you seen any movement that seeks to recapture it then? I mean, you speak, you know, at a level that is up there in the air, but as much as possible, I like to see people come right down on the ground and touch specific aspects of the problem so that right. We can better identify and relate to what you're saying.
All right,
what are some of the things that you have seen that we are doing right, and what are we doing wrong?
So we identify what the challenges are, how we recapture, you said, some of that energy, that's just out there, you know, languishing. There are programs that the government has instituted, the same construction gateway program, the other programs that target first-time employees, next steps program, that kind of stuff. So those are important, but I still think that there is a detached group of young men who are almost, you know, they exist outside of you know, the parameters that even the same government may seek to target. So we have.
So you got to target. You have to target them. You have to target them and the women in their lives, because usually, whenever you see them doing stuff, just go on IG and take a look and see who does be supporting them.
Right. So I am not blind or you know, ignorant to the fact that is there's a culture, a subculture that is pervasive, and you know, it's
a subculture that is fueled also by the music industry.
Granted.
The same music industry that you sometimes find people trying to protect in the name of the cultural industries and that sort of thing.
David, I mean, you are touching on some some making some connections that are you know, pivotal. But I still think that one by one, we have to make an effort to...
You see any back. Effort to deal with that, eh?
I
don't see none.
Okay.
I don't see any.
Well, that's something. If we really are going to you know, reverse these trends, we have to find a way to...
We need to be able to make, to connect the dots. That's the critical thing. Having connected the dots, though, you still have the large problem of, so exactly what are the interventions that we are going to use, and how effective are those interventions going to be when matched against the influences that are coming at people from at home and abroad?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big issue.
It is, and that's why I do agree that there must be a radical shakeup in the school system in terms of how we socialize our young people, how we educate them, because that you know, causing them to understand, have a sense of where they need to go, how they need to get there in a positive way. That's to me is the last opportunity, right, really, to pull them back. So I'm gonna have to
leave you now because we've had a fair run. So let's see.
All the best to you.
I share the concern. The only difficulty is in trying to come up with a mix of approaches. And as I said previously, I am particularly glad to see that we are trying to be more research-based and to react according to the research that we have. Good afternoon. I have to apologize to you. I said that we were going until 2 o'clock, but I am informed that we have some other business to do from 1 o'clock. So we are going to close the program in just a few minutes. Do I take a call now? This must be the last call. And I had a contribution here from Kelly in Chicago, which I wanted to share with you. Let's see if we have enough time. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, hi. You are?
Dave, I'm relatively short. I'm a past employee of BAMC, the company mm-hmm. that transitioned to the two new companies.
Yes.
And I have an issue, and that is that when the transition people were being taken place, we were told that we were here from Sagicor in relation to our pension, Sagicor pension. But, I mean, this is over a year. We haven't heard anything from Sagicor, BAMC. Now we haven't heard anything from the government. So I would like to know what is actually happening, because by now, in fact, I was told BMC should have notified Sagicor within 30 days, and then the falling action will continue going on from there, but we haven't heard anything. So what we would like to find out from the government, what is really happening to the workers that transition out of BMC in relation to the pension. And that's about it.
What steps did you take to reach out to any of them to find out what was going
on?
I went
back to BMC, and I was told, okay, we didn't contribute towards it. I didn't find that kind of strange, but anyhow, I didn't pay any money. But I went to Sagicor, and they said they haven't heard anything from BMC as yet. So they need, in order for there to take to go into the business of paying the workers, BMC need to inform Sagicor that they have terminated or they have transitioned something, but they haven't done that. So there is something wrong.
It's a long time to be waiting on a matter such as that.
Definitely.
It seems as though there are a number of things that we need to find out about the transition. So we are just adding this one to the list. How many workers involved? Over 100?
It's quite a good few workers. In fact, this will include all the workers. Because since the company has transitioned from a new company, from the old company to a new company, so the payroll everyone. So it means that everyone that was employed under the BNC would have been entitled for Sagicor pension.
Well, all of that needs to be clarified. I hope that the relevant authorities will look into it and get back to people like you, okay?
I call you because you normally get some intervention from the minister of
you have to, intervene another day. This is where we bring the curtain down on this edition, the Wednesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks to you and thanks to Graham Vaughan for making it possible. And I just want to remind you that this and other daily episodes of Down to Brass Tacks are available on the VOB website at vob929.com. I'm David Ellis, wishing you a great afternoon.